Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is writer and musician Adam Stempel, and we're talking about his book, The Prefrontal Playbook, Hacking Your Brain to Beat Anxiety and Depression. Adam, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, Mark.
Now, you're a writer. You're a well-known fantasy writer. You've certainly experienced this, but what sort of prodded you to sort of put this in writing and get it out for everybody?
I have been talking about this subject and this technique for long before it was okay to do it. As a man, and I'm a musician, an Irish musician, working in Irish bars, and just talking with people who normally wouldn't talk about mental health. I was kind of early on the scene 20 years ago, talking about this stuff and talking about my journey, and just trying to fill a niche that I felt was missing of just practical techniques. I kind of found that there was, in this kind of genre of writing books about mental health, there were kind of two main topics, which was a memoir or a psych drugs and therapy are bad. Here's the real way to beat depression. And I wanted something that was just, you know, real techniques on top of therapy and whatever his doctor recommended for you. The impulse to help people. Honestly.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I don't suffer clinically from major depression, anxiety attack disorder, and severe to moderate ADHD. That's all. But everybody goes through moments of anxiety too. And I found some of the techniques, and it just happened to me after I read your book, that it was helpful.
Fantastic. That's the idea. That's what I like to hear. Especially, you know, you mentioned being a fantasy writer. A lot of times being a writer is you're kind of throwing this stuff out into the void and wondering if you're doing anyone any good at all. So with this book, I've actually been able to have some actual feedback, which people saying, you know what, this really helped me. And that's, you know, that's really nice.
I want you first to talk about what you went through before you finally decided to seek professional help, because you went through hell.
You know, not comparatively, I think.
Compared to what? I'm reading it and it was going, crap, you know, your life almost went down the crapper.
Well, that is true.
Okay, so that's as bad as it gets.
We all downplay our own experiences.
Okay.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with my mother once who wanted to apologize for not recognizing what was going on with me.
Yeah.
So to put it in context, I turned 12 in 1980.
Okay.
And I kind of tracked my depression, thinking back through things. I think it really started hitting at about 9 years old. So 1977. And I told my mother, I said, there's no need to apologize. In the 80s, we didn't have the therapies. We didn't have the drugs. Right. We didn't even have the vernacular to talk about what was going on with me.
Well, we certainly had the drugs, but we didn't have those drugs.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And I tried many of them.
There's a remark, if I can just digress for a moment, in the book in which you talk about smoking crack, but it didn't really, you didn't think that much of it because you were on acid.
Yeah, that is how I describe my drug use. I said, all you really need to know is that I smoked crack once, but I didn't really feel anything because I was too high on acid. To say I experimented is, you know, I feel like I did more empirical research, really put the time in.
But you're homeless in points at this. You're drinking a lot of booze. What finally got you to seek professional help?
You know, you just every I like to say everyone has their own rock bottom.
Yeah.
And kind of until you hit it, you just don't know. And for me, it was just kind of it was my wife waking me up and saying, you know, you're losing your wife and your kids.
Wow.
And I didn't want that, it turns out.
The amazing thing, and the thing I really appreciate about this book is that you make it clear that you need to seek professional help. You need to take the psychopharmaceuticals that are prescribed to you, or at least you find the right ones for you. But the fact of the matter is that anxiety and depression for you is going to be something you're going to deal with off and on throughout your life. And you need techniques in order to prepare you for those moments. Is that fair to say to evaluate your book?
Yeah. I wanted to be very clear in the first chapter that I am not a doctor, and I'm a big fan of doctors.
Yeah.
And that you need to go see one and get a diagnosis and look at the therapies and the drugs that may help alleviate this for you. And in the last chapter, I also talk about, you know, empirical and anecdotal research,
right,
and how to do that yourself and just look at this stuff clear eyed. But then on top of that, you know, the importance of having extra techniques and tricks to be able to use, and something that I think I concentrate on that a lot of people miss is the importance of practicing these techniques and being ready. Because the hardest thing, you can know all the techniques in the world, if you don't apply them at the time you need them, it's no more use to you than not knowing them at all. So preparation and practice and being ready to use those techniques and having techniques that are easy to get to when you're in the middle of a crisis was a big focus for me.
One of the mantras throughout the book in your writing is do the work.
Yeah.
In other words, practice these different techniques and develop a sort of a set of things that so when your next attack happens, you can sort of ease into it.
Yeah, that is really core to my beliefs of how to beat this, particularly depression and anxiety,
yeah.
Which the other thing I say, one of the reasons I think I'm qualified to do this is I haven't had a depressive episode or a real anxiety attack in 10 years.
Wow.
So when we talk about, you know, having to fight this your whole life, I like to think I'm kind of a thing to look out to say that you don't. I don't spend my whole day thinking about how to have to fight this because I did the work and I worked really hard at it to be able to get to this point.
When you talk in the title of the book, The Prefrontal Playbook, talk about the prefrontal part of the brain and why it's important in all this.
You're cutting out just a little bit.
Okay.
For me here.
So talk about the prefrontal part of the brain and why it's important.
That all comes from my favorite brain theory called the triune brain theory that I talk about in the book. Which if you talk to neurobiologists, they'll tell you it's an oversimplified theory, to which I say, yes, it is. And that's what I need is an oversimplified theory because I'm not a neurobiologist and probably you aren't either. So the prefrontal cortex is kind of the third section of the big section of the brain that developed, that evolved. And it's kind of the seat of our identity and where all your logical thought and the higher processes occur, language and logic and mathematics. And the key part of it is that when you're thinking with that part of your brain, it's not the part that experiences emotion. So a lot of these techniques, and my biggest technique, is involved in forcing your brain activity into that portion of the brain,
right,
which just immediately shuts down panic attacks and depressive thoughts and stuff like that, because you're focusing your thoughts into a part of the brain that doesn't experience those.
Is anxiety the same as being fearful?
That is an excellent question, and it's not really. And there's also a difference between anxiety attacks and panic attacks.
Yes.
Though I generally use them interchangeably, but actually the speed of onset is how it's described in the I always blank on the exact numbers of the letters of the diagnostics, but a panic attack comes on instantly, and an anxiety attack is slow building. What I have is anxiety attack disorder, so I have the slow building ones. The panic attacks are really hard to do because you just because you just snap right into them. You get a little warning with the anxiety attacks. But no, it's not exactly the same as fear. Though, I mean, like anything else, all the physiological symptoms are the same.
Huh.
But you can fight just pure fear with the same techniques because they're all being experienced in the same thing. It's what I do in a lot of these techniques is kind of forget about the motives behind the fear and just deal with the fear itself,
right.
Fear and anxiety. And you experience fear and anxiety and anger and happiness and sadness, you know, all in the limbic system of your brain. And so if you're all your thinking's in there, you're thinking emotionally and you're thinking fearfully or you're thinking happily, which is fine, but you can force your thoughts out of there. So you can use the same techniques for fear as you do for anxiety. One of the techniques is the SEAL breathing technique from the Navy SEALs.
Is that the box breathing
technique? The box breathing, yep.
Okay. You know, That's like a basic thing from yoga. And I've been using breathing techniques when I start to get really anxious about medical stuff that's coming up in my life. And it was great reading that chapter of your book. But talk to me about what box breathing is.
Box breathing is just breathing in for a count of four, holding for a count of four, breathing out for a count of four, holding for a count of four, and repeating that. It's a very simple breathing technique, but most, you know, nearly any breathing technique you use and that resonates with you will help. It's just that taking control of your autonomic processes and controlling them and kind of the brain-body connection is a two-way street. So
right.
When you're calming your breath, you're calming your brain.
It's amazing when I do that, and it was great to read about it in your book because it seems like my mind's now focused on breathing, not what it was focused on before.
Yeah.
And at the same point, there's a physiological reaction when you start breathing deeply and regularly, and your body definitely relaxes. And so you don't have that physiological feedback of being anxious where your body's tensed up and all sorts of other things are going on. But it really does work.
Yeah. I really tried to concentrate on techniques that work.
Yeah, I didn't mean it that way. Damn it. I thought I'd rip the lid off this book, but no. Obviously you did. I didn't mean it to sound that way. But for people who are listening to both of us talk about it, they're probably going, that can't work because it seems too simple. But it really does.
The very first technique that I put in the book, this was another thing I really wanted to do in the book. I didn't want to do the thing where, and later I'm going to reveal my strongest technique.
Stay tuned.
I don't want to write the clickbait book. You know, so I lead with my best techniques, you know, but and it can, some of them, it's spooky how well they work. It freaked me out the first time I did math to stop an anxiety attack.
Oh my God. Well, first of all, I have to talk to you about the Fibonacci sequence. Now I knew what the Fibonacci sequence was, but you know, that's a thing that you sort of to think about. When you start to feel anxiety coming on, you know, start to do a simple math problem that sort of is continuous in your mind, and probably combined with the breathing technique too. But mm-hmm. the Fibonacci sequence is probably beyond a lot of people. It's like, first of all, the fact that you use the name, shame on you. But that's because you were into math.
I'm a bit of a math nerd. My father was the head of the computer science department at UMass Amherst. I was programming in machine code at like 9, 10 years old on a teletype in our house.
OMG. See, yeah, that explains. So now we got to talk about what the Fibonacci sequence is for people. We've talked about it enough. It is a basic thing that you would do, but talk about how you do it.
The whole technique is based on the triune brain theory and the fact that the lower brains, the brainstem, you know, when you're in a full panic sequence, your brainstem takes over. And it shuts off function to the other brain, other brains. And then your limbic system does the same thing, but it's where emotion lies. And that's what happens with panic attacks. You get so angry, you get so fearful, you get any time you're consumed with emotion, it shuts off function to your higher brain. So the theory is that you try and force your thoughts into your prefrontal cortex out of the limbic system. Right. And since the prefrontal cortex is where mathematics lives, if you do math, then it forces the function of your brain to move into the other part of your brain, and it shuts off the emotion.
That makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm asking you to explain the Fibonacci sequence.
The Fibonacci sequence. I'm getting to it. So the Fibonacci sequence is what I use because it's very simple. Because
you're a nerd.
Exactly. Proudly. And then it gets complicated very quickly.
Yeah.
So it starts with you simply take one number, add another number, and then you add the second number to the result and continue on from there. So you start with 1 + 2. 1 + 2 = 3. 2 + 3 = 6. 3 + 6.
No, 2 + 3 = 5.
Yes. It's very early in the morning. really, I can't believe.
It goes obviously through infinity. Yeah. Fibonacci sequence shows up in nature too, doesn't it?
I would just like to say that we just spent 2 minutes saying I was a math nerd, and then I screwed up 2 + 3.
I think that's perfect.
So.
I wouldn't worry about
it. It occurs in nature. All math occurs in nature.
Another talk we could actually have. It's
like, I know. There's a beautiful book I read once in a dentist's office of all places.
Oh God!
And it was actually a nature photographer and a mathematician talking about fractals.
Oh yeah.
With pictures of fractals in nature.
I know those nerds. I'm actually sort of secretly, not so secretly, one of those nerds, but in a different way. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is writer and musician Adam Stempel. And we're talking about his book, The Prefrontal Playbook, Hacking Your Brain to Beat Anxiety and Depression. Now, I also want to mention for the benefit of the audience, the chapters are all short, so they're easy to digest. And they all have hilarious titles for some reason. It's like, and so it's a very welcoming book and a really easy book to get into. One title, though, and you have to talk about this, is Give Up Immediately and Celebrate Every Win. Now, I understood immediately, celebrate every win. But what do you mean give up immediately?
Give up immediately.
Just give up.
My key to happiness. Just give up. That came about from working at Target, and I was managing the back room. I came up. I spent a few years working in the back room at Target. I wanted to just throw boxes, and then they promoted me, and all of a sudden I was managing the back room.
Oy.
And every day we would have a meeting of all the managers, and the head of the store would. Tell us, you know, what he needed to get done today. And he'd give you a list of stuff that you needed to get done that was impossible to accomplish.
Great.
So you had some choices, which was you could try to kind of work on everything and not finish any of them, And at the end of the day, when the boss asks you what you get done, you tell him essentially nothing. Or you could give up immediately on the stuff you definitely couldn't finish and then concentrate on the ones you could. And that was where my theory of give up immediately.
And that makes, and I think in a lot of people's lives, they just have this huge long list of things that need to be done. And they just keep looking at the list and you start getting anxious about the fact that you're never going to get it all done.
Yeah.
And you're writing that the fact, break it down and realistically look at the things that you can get done today and then sweat the other stuff the next day.
It's really just a way of saying, you know, break it down into achievable goals, but coming at it from the other side.
Yep.
Because most people with mental illness often have ADHD or ADHD-like symptoms and executive functioning problems associated with it, either naturally or because their depression and anxiety has brought that on, has broken down their executive functioning. So looking at that list is very difficult. And, you know, and they've been told repeatedly, well, you just got to break it down into little things, you know, and it hasn't resonated. So let's hit them from the other side. You look at that long list, man, just give up immediately. Then they can laugh and then they can give up on most of the tasks. And then instead of having to collate it and try and see which what's number one, what's number two? We had 10 things. I gave up on 9 of them. What's left?
Right, right. But now,
you know, humor is a great way in.
The other part of that chapter is really important. And that's celebrate the positive things. And mm-hmm. and you mean that in like a very basic way.
Absolutely. My wife laughs. If I dump out my morning pills, if I put them in my weekly thing and I dump them out in my hand and it's the perfect number, it's like I won the Super Bowl. I'm running around the kitchen. Woo!
If you make that basket with the crumpled up piece of paper, celebrate that. Yeah.
Yeah, you just sank the winning basket.
What you're doing is you're retraining your brain.
Exactly. You're burning new pathways, new joyful pathways. They've actually done some really interesting stuff on people with depression who have really just kind of burned these depressive pathways into their brain that they just follow the same track every day. And you got to try and break yourself out of that and just, having goofy celebrations for anything is a great way to do it. And it's fun.
Now,
it's fun for people around you.
We're going to run out of time, which is a good thing. But I want to talk about the chapter Be a Goldfish. And that's a thing from Ted Lasso, the TV series.
Yep.
And it's about letting stuff go once you've dealt with it. And the example you gave is when we're under the influence and not in the best state of mind, you caused some problems for people, or you might have just been a total jerk for a day to somebody. You apologize, a heartfelt apology to them, and even if they don't accept it, you got to just let it go. You move on.
I find that people, and myself included, there's this very strange cycle where you do something bad to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when you see them, it reminds you you've done something bad. So now you're associating them with feeling bad. So you get mad at them.
Huh.
And it is a very strange thing, and it's very natural. And it also tends, another thing that kind of gets wrapped up in that is that when you go to apologize to someone and they're still mad at you, then you get mad at them for not accepting your apology. And I'm always big on forgiveness is a gift one gives oneself. That means also that you don't get to choose for them whether they forgive you or not.
Right.
And you're not in charge of it. And it's a part of letting go. Do what you need to do to apologize and atone and move on. And it's both for you and for them. But the part for you is that it's very difficult to fight anxiety on its own. It's especially difficult when you've got anxiety for stuff that you actually did. It becomes very difficult to get to techniques. It gets very difficult to forgive yourself. It gets very difficult to fight the problem. And so at some point, you have to just move on from it so that you can begin to heal. And that was a tough chapter to write. And I don't know that I came up with any real answers in that chapter. It's more about just talking about it,
right?
And realizing the necessity of moving on. And I think it was it in that chapter or another one, I think, where I said, really, the number one reason to be happy is that it's better to be happy. There's going to be a lot of reasons in your life to be sad, to feel guilty, to feel shame. And at some point, you've just got to decide to feel happy and start from there.
We're just about completely out of time. We're down to like 1 minute. Adam, do you give public talks about the things that are in this book?
I do. I do. Okay. I've just begun doing that. I was at a little
We're going to really have to stop because we're out of time. There's so much more in this book. I want to mention that to people. We've just really scratched the surface of a few topics in this book. And there's a lot of practical things. And the book is really structured to be very helpful to you. Every single chapter has a sort of summary at the end. It's great. And there's a great section at the end. My guest tonight is writer and musician Adam Stemple. And we've been talking about his book, The Prefrontal Playbook, Hacking Your Brain to Beat Anxiety and Depression. Adam, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.